Over the past few months, three local religious leaders, a Jew, a Christian and a Muslim, have been coming into the studio to discuss and explore with me the similarities and differences between their three sets of beliefs. When the recent referendum result was announced, it became clear that the impacts of that result, politically and socially, included a powerful potential effect on our larger community, as well as on the smaller communities within it. Especially when it became apparent that the division between the two sides of the political debate seemed to have encouraged some unpleasant side effects, not least overt racism and attacks on immigrants from Europe and the rest of the world. I wanted to find out how these three men of faith face up to this sort of an issue. So I invited Rabbi Raphael Kaiserbluth of the Masorti Synagogue in Fleetville, the Reverend Tony Hurl, Vicar of St. Paul's, also in Fleetville, and Akhtar Zaman, President of the St. Albans Islamic Centre, which is also in Fleetville, to join me once again. Let me ask Tony, the Christian, the Vicar, you've got a community which is quite at home in this country, because it's always lived here, as it were. It's quite comfortable with the church because, you know, we are a, quotes, Christian background country. What are you saying to your people now? Where are we?
In a way, when you're like that, you can have the sort of automatic superiority of ownership and you just don't realise what other people feel. And I think here in St Albans, we are, the society has changed. Naturally, we've got a community who enjoy change. They see change in their work and it's generally winning. So there's bad change and there's good change, but it's not the idea that any change would be bad. So that gives a backdrop, which wouldn't necessarily be true in some communities, I think. But I suppose for Christians, I'd want to say, first of all, there's a common humanity. God created us all. So the differences are real, and that's right, but they are set within that we need each other and we're all valued by God, we're all made by God. So it's a blot on the stain of our history, isn't it, that we ever embraced slavery or allowed slavery to continue for so long after Christianity became institutionalised, as it were, as part of the government, that slavery continued, because that's treating someone as a thing, not as a person. And it's much to our shame that that did continue and we sort of, you know, churches were built off the money that came from it. But no one feels very comfortable about that now. So we can, in ourselves, we can get it wrong. But I think the theology would be that Jesus came to us while we're sinners and loved us before we were nice people. I go to a church, St. Paul's, where he's known as someone who was a persecutor of the church who became the greatest missionary. So it's right there in the idea of both common humanity, but also the idea that people can change and that the other brings something to the table. The difference between a church and a club sometimes is hard to distinguish, but it is important. Club really exists for itself. Church should exist for others. So it's right there in the DNA, and you'd remind them of it. But it's very easy, isn't it, when evil is done to us, to do evil back. Paul writes, don't repay evil for evil, but rather repay evil with good. Bless your enemies, Jesus said. But humanly speaking, it's a good day with the wind behind you, but that's the teaching which we all know. And so I think to deal with the bad things with forgiveness and the knowledge that God can work through it for good enables things to be worked through with hope and positivity, even if they're things that actually aren't helpful at all or wrong, that there's hope there.
I feel the Jews in society, not just our society, have been through hell frequently, and yet you survive and you go on with a sense of optimism. How do you cope with situation?
There are some who do it with optimism. There are some who cynicism is the way forward, or the coping mechanism, I should say. I think the secret to the success is knowing that we have a split identity, I suppose, that we know we are Jews, but we are also ones living here are British. The ones living in the United States, where I grew up, are Americans and are fiercely patriotic. I think in many of those cases, because they know, for example, my grandparents knew that they were not welcome in the country where they were, and they've passed that on. When you are welcomed in a country and they support you and protect you, you do all you can to support that country. It's part of our fiber. It's part of our DNA. It's part of our history of always being a minority for the last 2,000 years. We know wherever we live, we need to adapt to that country. And that's why you see Jews from all over the world in various different countries picking up a lot of the local habits, a lot of the local traditions, anything from dress to name to food and language they speak. And so I think if you would ask Jews here in the United Kingdom, they would very much, the majority of them, identify very clearly as British, in spite of recent history and the not-so-recent history. I mean, we were chucked out of this country, I think, 4 or 5 times, I think, or something like that. But even in spite of that, I think they look at their neighbors and see no difference in their nationality. Maybe their religion and politics, perhaps, but their nationality, their sense of identity and belonging, I don't think you would see any difference there.
What's it like to have a sense of being a minority? Is that a fair question?
I think that's a very fair question, actually. I think that the underlying tones sometimes reflect our outward actions. But more often than not, people keep them in control on an individual basis. However, when they are in a larger group and they feel they have the strength, and I'm talking about this both ways, whether it's the minority who have a large group who are picking on individuals in the majority, or the majority treating the minority in a bad way. And bad could be just name-calling, could be physical abuse, etc. What distinguishes most people is their colour, not so much their race, and their religion. And people of a different colour tend to stand out a little bit more than white people or white immigrants of other countries. Therefore, they're an easy target and they're identified as foreigners. I've lived in this country for probably 90% of my life. My children are born here. I haven't got any grandchildren, but some people already have grandchildren. So we're talking about third generation who've lived in this country. They've adopted this as their homeland. That's their homeland. They've not been anywhere else. So this, to them, is their country. It's funny, when I go to other countries, I'm immediately identified as British through my accent and my actions. However, when I'm here, because of my colour, I'm not always identified as British, which is an odd feeling. Being a minority actually kind of puts you in a certain mindset that you have to feel you have to blend in some way and accept things which you may not agree with. And that sometimes is a difficult situation to be in. I mean, I'm quite a liberal person myself, and you know, I get on with everybody. As I say, I've been to 33 different countries around the world, so I've seen different races, different types of people. So for me, to integrate with those people is a very easy choice. To others who may have been isolated, segregated, if I could use that word, it's a bit more difficult for them. Most people, Asian people, would now say, yes, they are British, and they accept this as their homeland. I mean, there may be odd few who would disagree with that, but most would agree that. Because when I talk to youngsters and I say to them, so which country are you from? And they say, well, here, we were born in England. So that's their mindset. And going forward, when working with their peers, that's the mindset that will go forward and it will make life a lot more easy. However, the colour difference is something that will always stand out and people will pick upon that.
Tony, you started this conversation between the three of you, I think, as far as I remember, way back, by saying, well, Christians should approach the Muslim community because the Christian community doesn't know enough about them. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I was vicar here for a while and thought there are two mosques here and I don't know Muslims. And I didn't know at that stage. I could knock on the, you know, walk into a mosque and that would be fine. I did know other Muslims around, so it wasn't that I didn't know any, but I don't think I knew them very well. And I found particular friendships with a few. But I know there's a warmth with anyone, and it's very interesting if I walk into the mosque. They may or may not know me. It's not, I mean, I am probably now a bit of a known character. I think genuinely, if I surprise a Muslim in the mosque, they just warm to me. And I didn't know that. So I think a lot of the problems comes with the fear But obviously there are situations, aren't there, where there's unemployment and difficulties like that, where there can be real difficulties, and it's not illusory. Mine was illusory in the sense that any ideas I had of how difficult it would be, and I can remember early conversations, you know, of, you know, things like removing your shoes and, you know, where the boundaries are, and I feel there's a graciousness to accept if you get it wrong, you're an outsider, that's okay, sort of thing. There's not that rigidity. But there are times when that might be so. But equally, I feel often we as English people have ignored them. So I feel we're trying to build the bridge.
Would you expect a Muslim to come to your church to find out what's going on? Is that possible? Is that easy?
It's possible. I suppose most people who come into the building for the church service would be coming to worship. I mean, a Muslim is welcome to come, and I think at the civic services they do. We have people through in our church, which is also a sort of community-used place, and they come in there.
That's because you have group, parent groups and kids and things. And
but we put a restriction on worship. So the worship in our place is to God as we understand him. And, you know, I wouldn't expect to go and do a church service.
Yes, when you say you're going to the mosque, then you're going in there to
I'm going in there to talk to them, meet with them and stuff.
And anybody can do that. Anybody could walk in off the street. Are we saying the mosque or is in the Islamic Centre, just to help clarify this?
I think both. It's a good point that you raised there. I mean, sometimes the Islamic Centre is the wider concept of a community centre where there is a part which is the mosque, which is used for worship. In our case, I think we probably use them synonymously, and everybody is welcome to come into the mosque area as well.
And that's not a threat to them to come in, because they're coming in to meet people that they may not know, to get some understanding of a culture as well as a religion.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had a number of people who've actually come in as a group because they wish to find out a little bit more. We invite them in, give them a tour of the mosque, say, this is what we do here, this is why we do it. And then if they have any questions, the questions are open questions. They can ask any questions that they like. And, you know, we have a good rapport and they go away happy. And we're happy that we're able to actually give the information to them to help them understand better what we do. I do remember when the Taliban first kind of came to the prominence, everybody thought that we went to the mosque to prepare for jihad. And to most people, jihad is the act of killing people, whereas that's not what it is. Jihad is actually sacrifice and doing things for other people over your own self.
So here we got a perversion of an Arabic word.
Yes.
Okay.
And so we're very happy. And since I've been kind of the leader there, if you like, at the centre, I've invited people in of all races, of all religions, of all walks of life. So we've had judges, we've had the Salvation Army in there, we've had church groups, we've had school groups, and we love for them to come and talk to us and find out a little more.
What I found really helpful, though, is as I get to know Akhtar, I mean, we now, because we're friends, I can ask him hard questions, as it were, so that I think you get beyond the polite when you're not sure whether that's what you'd say underneath, so that I feel that Akhtar is genuinely about peace. So that's a really good antidote, then, to some representatives of the Muslim faith who wouldn't be in the same way. And we know those, but it's the taking off those, just like on the Christian side when there was the IRA and the Protestant extreme forces, we didn't feel they were like us at all, and we assumed everyone else realized that they were not. They sort of owned that they were Christian, but actually it wasn't a Christianity we at all felt any resonance, any validity for.
Rafi, this is a fairly, I mean, this particular community, which regret, so to say, you're about to leave and go to a foreign country, but that's for your own reasons. But this is quite this is a very mixed community, which I like very much. It's a very liberal community, which I like very much. It must be fairly easy. You don't feel threatened here in any way?
I don't feel threatened here at all. And I think the biggest reason why I don't is, I think you alluded to that, Tony, that why we can talk to each other is because we have that underlying relationship. I would never presume to walk up to anybody, really, and ask them deep personal questions and expect an honest answer. There needs to be a relationship underlying that. Mm. And I think we in this city, in this community, have worked very, very hard to see that we do that. And for that reason, no, I don't feel threatened here. There are the outliers and the extremists and the fringe elements, and you're going to have that unfortunately anywhere. So do I, as a Jew living in St. Albans, feel threatened? No. I walk with my kippah on my head without fear, without anything. Now, it has happened in the past twice that I have been incidents because of that, but I really don't believe that is symptomatic or indicative of the culture or the feel of the city at all. That was two individuals being ignorant. I mean, we see that in the way that when we do our events together, how many people show up for that? I have just this morning, I had 150 school children coming and showing the same thing that you do. This is what a synagogue is. This is our holy books. This is what we do here. This is.
But these are non-Jewish children. These are children.
Yes, yes, from the local schools. I'm doing it every day this week. So we've had, I think, over 300 students just this week. I have another several hundred next week. This is breaking down those barriers of saying, look, I am a normal human being like you. I may speak slightly differently. I may look slightly differently, but I'm a human being and you are too. And let's embrace our differences. Let's share our differences and break down that darkness of in ignorance and shine a light on what we can discuss and what we can share. And I think that is the beauty of what we do. It's giving the space for those relationships to flourish so we can have those difficult discussions with one another.
And one of the good things that's come from it is a sort of permission that because we've met together in the past, now people either ring me up and say, what's your number? And I'll give them your number and they'll contact you. But there's a sort of permission giving, which I think even when I started, 15, 16 years ago, wasn't there in the same way. And that just means that if there's a problem, it doesn't have to fester. You can sort it out. And that's what you want in a society, so isn't it?
If there is a problem that affects one part of the community, that problem can be taken to the other parts of the community.
And we had one situation where I think it was taxi drivers were being abused by drunk English people. And they felt the police weren't responding quick enough. So they were tempted to put a wheel brace in the car, which obviously isn't a good answer. And just because that came up because we talked, it then got facilitated that they had a special telephone line. If they phoned it, the police promised they'd respond quickly. And it just took the sting out of what otherwise was something which could escalate. And it just seems to me, if you can have that easy thing, you can understand and you don't get the feelings of alienation.
One of the things that I feel personally is the fact that I've grown up in St. Albans and I feel part of the St. Albans community. However, I do have a religious belief and I have an identity which I've kept and I feel comfortable with. I'm happy to talk to people about it in a nice way without getting angry. There was a time when I was younger when people would ask certain questions, it would anger me. Why are you asking me that type of question? Don't you know? But over time, I've mellowed because they don't know.
And then you're a role model
for
the youngsters coming up, aren't
you? Exactly.
And that's what's needed because you have huge respect in your community and you model.
Absolutely. And, you know, talking about standing together, for instance, when there were certain attacks happening on mosques in not so distant past, we've had church groups come to us and said, we're here, we'll stand with you. Would you like us to come and stand outside your mosque whilst you do your prayer? Which to me was very comforting that not everybody has a hatred. There are good people. We talk about the commonality. The commonality is actually greater than the difference. However, people with bigotry and small-mindedness tend to focus on the difference. And I always say when I have this type of discussion, and I've kind of mentioned it in this group as well, let's focus on the commonality. Mm. Once you get through that, the difficult questions become a lot easier to answer because the platform is then set.
And you can live with the fact that Tony, at every opportunity, and I don't mean this rudely, Tony, you will explore and explain your fundamental belief. You will come back to Jesus as your saviour, and it doesn't offend the other two one iota.
No.
They live with that. That is part of the relationship.
It is interesting, though, that I think when I used to teach, the groups you have the most difficulty with are the ones who aren't proud of their own heritage. So I think if you're dealing with insecure people, they are more likely then to want a tribal sort of answer. So in a way, if you're secure in your identity, you can afford to disagree, can't you? And it doesn't rock you. So some of this is about the people who do struggle. It's how do they feel valued and secure is what's lacking, and how does that get put in?
And that's the big question facing us as a larger community. How do we restore value to people who have felt they're devalued?
And I think as society gets more uneven and the haves have more and the have-nots, that's a really critical question, isn't it, of how do you restore people onto a ladder? And I think some of that is spiritual, some of that's emotional, some of that's sort of practical and physical.
Yeah. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate coming in at this time, and some interesting and very challenging times ahead of us, I'm sure. Thank you.